might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, Metal Tales from the Road. I'm Ethan Luck, and this week we have another great show we're talking about. We're talking about Metallica in Houston, Texas, 2017 on the World Wire Tour, and one of our lovely patrons is gracing us with his presence from Texas, Zach Burkhalter. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Not a problem. I'm glad we're doing this, and we're you know, kicking the Metal Tales back into high gear. We're going to be releasing these once a week every Thursday for the entire month, if not longer. And yeah, I'm glad we can make some time to do this. So it's the 4th of July today. I'm sure I have plans later. I'm sure you have plans later to light stuff on fire or something.
Of course.
Accidentally or purposefully, we'll see how that goes. Yeah, thanks for being here on a holiday, which everyone should be, you know, hanging out with their family and friends and barbecuing and just, you know, having a good time. And here we are digitally talking to each other over Zoom, and we're going to talk about some Metallica.
Yeah, sounds good, yeah.
So let's, like all these things, let's kind of start with your origin story of you know, when you discovered Metallica, when did that light bulb turn on, and, you know, maybe the first record you ever got that really got you into the band.
Yeah. So for me, I have, like, two people in my life that, like, really got me into a lot of music. The first one is my uncle. He lives up on a farm in North Dakota, and we joke that he could be a cult leader, and we're like 75% kidding, but you never know. But he's like an old like 70s rock dude and like stuff like that. You go into his house, and it's just like hundreds of CDs, hundreds of vinyl.
Cool.
And so whenever I was like 10 or 11, I started to get into like rock and metal and just kind of music in general. And we went to visit him, and he basically had like a big thing of blank CDs. And he was like, hey, like, just here, take some paper and then like write down some artists that you like are kind of into or you want to check out, and I'll go through them and I'll make you some CDs. And so I was like, yeah, that sounds good and stuff. And so I just wrote down like a whole list, and most of them were like, I didn't even really know them. It was just kind of like writing names from like recognition.
Right.
Because I was like 10. So I mean, I'm not exposed to a lot, but like, so I wrote down like Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd and stuff. And then one of the names I wrote down was Metallica, just because I heard the name. And then one of the CDs he gave me was the Black Album. And I think it took me a little while before I listened to it. It's funny. I like, you know, like we always joke about it, but Enter Sandman is like what got me. I like listened to that song and it was so awesome. And then, funny enough, a couple months later, I'm from Southeast Texas. I live in like the Austin area now, but, we had Hurricane Rita come in. And we had to evacuate, and pretty much all that I had with me was like my CD case and my Discman, and like one of the albums I listened to like nonstop was the Black Album, and like, you know, there's like a 24-hour period where like, you know, like kind of the dust had to settle, and we don't really know if like, you know, do we still have a house and stuff, and it's
yeah.
Like, oh, so wherever I may roam again.
It was the soundtrack, yeah, to that era for you.
Yeah, it kind of was, yeah. I think I both kind of associate, like, the first three songs of that album with kind of just, like, playing that over and over again while we're just at, like, my relative's house.
Well, that's one of the great things about music, too, you know, whether it's a good memory or a bad memory associated with it, is that especially when you first hear something or you first are getting into a band and discovering their music, and there's certain songs that you will forever associate with a period of time in your life or a specific event. Like, in your case, it's, you know, Hurricane Rita, you know, I've got stuff like that, you know. It's like, you know, for me, I can remember my first Black Album memory, maybe even before I saw the Enter Sandman video, was being on a vacation with my parents and my sisters in Santa Barbara, California. That's where we would go every summer. And I remember, you know, my dad and I go into the record store, and I bought the Black Album on cassette. It came out like that day or something like that. And so that, you know, similar to you, like that will forever be in my brain until my memory's gone or something.
Exactly.
Of yeah. You know. Black Album means Santa Barbara, California, because I mean the rest of that vacation I had it in my Walkman. I listened to it nonstop, and you know, just blew my mind. So same kind of thing where it's, yeah, it's just forever. You're going to think of, oh, this is when the hurricane was coming. We had to evacuate. You know, that album has that kind of meaning to you now.
Yeah, I think it might be like a darker memory than it sounds. Like it actually, like everybody was okay and stuff, and I ended up like kind of just spending a lot of time with my family because we all had to like evacuate to the same spot and stuff like that. We had to, so like it is like I think a not quite as a dark memory as it sounds, but right. You know, it's still you know, you're kind of just there holding on, waiting for everything to pass over, and it's like, yeah, throw on the Black Album again.
Yeah, for sure. About how long did you like have that copy of the Black Album that your uncle made you before you started like discovering like, oh wow, they have other music too?
So it was pretty quick, but the other person that kind of got me into music was my cousin, and from my dad's side, uncles from my mom's side, he was actually raised with us, with me and my brother, so he's, you know, basically an older brother. He's a little bit older than us. I think he's about your age. He's 42. But he was also the one that got me into a bunch of music too. And actually, like when he kind of found out that I was listening to Metallica and that was one of his favorite bands, he was like, oh, okay. And stuff. And,
about to blow your mind.
Exactly. And actually I think it was the year prior to that, he went and saw them on, St. Anger tour. I think it was either 03 or 04. I can't really remember what year they came to Houston, but I like begged for him to go, not because like I didn't really even know who they were at that time, but like I just wanted to go to a show.
Yeah.
And he was like in his early 20s, and he's like, man, he's like, I'm going with some friends. Like, I don't think it's a good idea and stuff. And I was so bummed, but like in hindsight, like I totally get it, obviously. But he came home. And he was like, hey, he's like, I'm really sorry that I didn't take you to the show, but like, I do have something for you. And I was like, what? And he was like pretty like close to the rail, and James threw him a pick.
Cool.
And he gave it to me.
Oh, you still got it too. That's awesome.
Yeah. And stuff. And so some kind of monster on it, stuff like that.
That's
so
awesome.
I was like, all right, you're forgiven. You're forgiven.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, and that's, you know, that's a very thoughtful thing to do, obviously, going to the show. And of course, you know, I'm sure in retrospect, like you said, you understand why he didn't take you or something like that. But
yeah,
what a cool thing for him to do, you know, and obviously help expose you to more of their music.
Exactly. But like, it was probably like a gradual process. I really came online, like got obsessed with the band, I think, like in the death, like right up before Death Magnetic came out.
Yeah.
That was when like I bought like an actual copy of the Black Album. I got Master of Puppets, Ride the Lightning. And I think like the big, like no turning back for me was the first time I heard Fight Fire with Fire.
Yeah.
Like just hearing that intro and stuff, I was like, holy shit. Like it was kind of like hearing something that like shouldn't quite exist. You know, you're like,
yeah.
What is this?
That's definitely that especially that early era of Metallica, those first couple records. It's, yeah, same kind of feeling when I first heard that stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe this music has existed this long and I didn't know. And you know, the first thing I ever heard was One when I saw the video on MTV, and then, you know, but the first album I bought was Puppets. But you know, when my friend was like, oh, you got to listen to Kill 'Em All, and I heard that and I was like, oh my god, like it's kind of like punk rock, it's kind of like metal, like, but it was just, it sounded like none of their records sound like anybody else, of course, but you know, that one especially, when I first heard Kill 'Em All, it was like, oh my goodness, like I don't understand what's happening here. Like it was so aggressive and angry, and I was like, how do they play that stuff? It was awesome.
Yeah, but I think that was the beginning. Like I have such a like a love for that era, just because like that really I think was like when I was just like obsessed with them. I would, you know, I would check setlist.com or something before like going to school every morning to see what they played the night before and stuff. Yeah. Like that. I almost saw them in 08 in Houston. I don't remember why it didn't work out, but I remember thinking like, oh, they'll be back soon. And then it was like 9 years later.
Right, exactly.
But that was the most fun. I mean, I started like a band. I was like 14 or 15, which is like a perfect age really to start like discovering like, you know, all these new bands.
Oh, yeah.
Once you discover Metallica, And then, you know, it was like, it's kind of a joke, but like, I found out like, oh, there was this other guy that was a guitar player in Metallica that's not in there anymore. And he started this band called Megadeth. What are they like?
Yeah.
You know, and then Anthrax player, you just start kind of just opening the vault. And really it's just kind of a waterfall. And then like, which like 14, 15 is like perfect age for that. And, I started a band and stuff like that. We sucked, but like, you know, like it was just the fun of it is getting out in someone's garage and
sure.
playing a couple covers. I think we wrote one original song that was basically like a total rip off generic version of Seek and Destroy.
That's awesome. But that you're right though. That is a great age though. Cause you know, you're not only discovering like who you are, what your tastes are, but once you do discover something like Metallica and then all of a sudden you're at school or church or whatever. And oh wait, that dude's wearing a Metallica shirt. I should talk to him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that guy plays bass or you play guitar. It opens the world up. And then obviously, you know, with discovering other music too, I mean, most of the metal I discovered was because of a couple dudes in my junior high, you know, that mm-hmm. I'm still friends with to this day. And they're back in California, but like, I didn't know who Sepultura was or even Slayer or, you know, any of those bands. And then I'd see them wearing a shirt of whatever, you know, Anthrax or something. I'm like, who's that? You know, and they would just loan me a tape or something and I would take it home and or listen to it in my Walkman at school and just be like, oh my God, there's so much music out there. Like, you know, that's the beauty of music in general. I think even you know, when you get older, it's like, it's never ending. You know, you can't ever discover every artist in the world and there's always new things coming out. And, you know, some things can sound like other things, but at the end of the day, it's like, you can always discover new music. And, you know, I'm 42 and I'm still getting my mind blown by artists that come out sometimes, you know, like I know I've gushed over Julian Baker and her, I guess now it's 2 records ago. And I think I played on one of her songs on the radio episodes, but things like that, you know, I'm like, oh my God, like this girl's doing such awesome music that just, you know, impacts me just, you know, on a musical level. I don't know. I'm rambling on about this, but it's one of those things. That's the beauty and power of music is that kind of stuff just never ends.
Exactly. No, and you're talking about like kind of just, you know, like you find things through other people and stuff like that. That's exactly it. Like, oh, you heard this band. And then I still remember like early on too, I was talking to somebody about Metallica at like the lunch table. And I was like, oh, there's this song called Battery. It's so awesome. It's so fast. And then this guy that like kind of sat a couple people down that I didn't know very well looks at me and goes, no, Blackened is fast. Yeah.
Like, you that? Need to hear Dire's Eve.
Exactly. So I was like, I'll check it out.
Do you find that since you're a teacher, do you ever see or overhear anybody talking about bands like Metallica?
It happens every now and then. I think right now it's like, I try not to be like too old man about it. Cause I think at the age that I teach, which is 7th grade, like everyone's super kind of conforming and like doesn't like kind of hasn't quite like found themselves just yet.
Sure.
And so like, I think like everyone kind of sticks to like what's popular, but every now and then I do hear like kind of like some things like I'll mention, and it's not necessarily Metallica, but, I have one student that was, they had some free time and he had pulled up, like a playlist on his computer. And I like glanced over and saw it and I was like, oh, and I like went over and I was like, hey, I was like, this album you're listening to, like I was like 16 when it came out, dude. Like I have this album. And he was like, cool. And I was like, all right, good talk.
Cool. Yeah. Like, it is funny at that age, like really junior high and high school, it's like you have some kids, you know, that I guess maybe they're raised a certain way and they're very outgoing with adults and stuff like that. But you know, when you're that age, everybody that's older than you is just old, you know, like.
Oh, yeah,
you know, like my niece is 16. All her friends are like 16, 17 years old. And like, they will tease me like, oh, you're just old. And I'm like, I'm 42. You'll get it one day. That's not old. But, it's tough to like introduce people to, you know, of that age to certain kinds of music, you know, cause they just, like you said, they might like what's popular. Like, you know, my niece went through this huge, you know, Billie Eilish phase, and she's an amazing artist. And then she did the thing that I did in high school, where she's like, "Yeah, I stopped listening to her because like she's like super popular now, and everybody knows her." And like she was discovering her when she was just like, you know, YouTube videos, and my niece literally went to go see her in a little club in L.A. And then like the next year, she's selling out, you know, arenas. And over the years, I've tried to get her or my nephews into other bands, or I'll just have something playing in the car if I like take them to lunch or something. And really the only one of them that ever really, I think, pays attention or maybe cares about what I'm playing is my youngest nephew, who's 11. And he really loves stuff with horns. Like, he loves jazz music, which is just blows my mind that he's 11 and loves jazz. And so
that's awesome.
It's great. And so I started playing him like reggae music and like old school ska that has a lot of horns in it and stuff. And he was like bobbing his head. He's like, I really like this. And if he comes over here, I'm like, hey, let's go get one of my vinyl records. Let's put on a jazz record or whatever. And so he's definitely more in tune with that kind of stuff, which is, I think, a little rare. Whereas, yeah, like you said, a lot of your students, it's like, they just kind of like what's popular right now, you know?
Oh yeah. I do try to plant some seeds though. Cause like every now and then we'll have like free time and I'm like, I'm just going to play some music in the background. And it's like a different kind of stuff, like not necessarily even metal, all kinds of stuff. Like I went through, I really love, Bob Dylan now, mostly Go to the Clan, and then, just ever different kinds of stuff. Threw on Hendrix once and stuff like that.
Cool.
People were like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But we had a lesson not too long ago about on similes and metaphors. I'm an English teacher.
Yeah.
And I was like, and we were trying to like use, we were going to use songs to like kind of go over examples because a lot of my students were, you know, online. And I was meeting with the other English teacher and I was like, hey, I was like, there's this song from Metallica called That Was Just Your Life that's like nothing but similes and metaphors. And I showed it to her and she's like, yeah, let's use this.
That's cool.
And stuff. And so we like used it in the lesson and stuff like that. And I was like, let's dissect these lyrics. And they, right. Like, we're like going through. And stuff like
that's
that.
Cool. And next week, the curriculum is Rain and Blood by Slayer.
Exactly.
Man, I totally remember learning about similes and metaphors. Similes use like and as, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay. I may have graduated with a C- average, but I remember that.
You nailed it.
Yes. Thanks, Mr. Burkhalter. That's cool, man. So what would you say at this point now in your life after, you know, discovering Metallica when you did, you know, obviously the Black Album was like the first thing you really heard and dove into, but like, where do you stand now? It's ever changing, of course, what everyone's maybe favorite record is. Mine always kind of sticks with Master of Puppets. But some days I'm like, you know what? Injustice for All is the best record. So where do you currently stand as your favorite?
I'm like, you know, actually, I thought for a long time it was Master of Puppets. And I was driving home one day and I threw on Load. And I was just thinking, I was like, I think this is my favorite album of theirs. Like,
yeah.
I just, you can't go wrong. Like, Bleeding Me, A Lot Torn, Hero of the Day. And and just parts of that album to me, I know that it's like, it obviously has like the thing where people think, oh, they sold out and it's not as heavy, but to me, like, there are certain parts of that album that are just as heavy,
yeah,
just in different ways than to like the first four or five. But I think it's definitely Load and Master of Puppets.
You will make Clint a very happy person. Clint's gonna be so excited.
Yeah.
It's well documented that is his era. He loves it so much, and anyone that gives that era some love, Clint is just beside himself.
Yeah,
that's cool. So while we're on the topic of favorites, I know you and this has nothing to do with Metallica, by the way. So fast forward if you don't listen to me and Zach geek out about Rocky. But we have to talk about it because you and I share a mutual love for those movies. What is your favorite Rocky movie?
I mean, is it lame to say the first one? I mean, like, nope. I don't think there's really another right answer. But what about you?
Rocky 1 is my favorite one. Now, when I was younger, like probably in high school and stuff or whatever, Rocky 4 was probably my favorite because Rocky 4 is... In the Rocky series, for those of you that don't watch it, Rocky IV is the Black Album. You know, it was the biggest production. It made the most money, most popular, and all that stuff. And you know, it's the one in that franchise that gets revisited the most. I mean, they're about to do a director's cut of it, Sylvester Stallone, or re-edit and stuff like that.
I'm still looking forward to that.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that one was a favorite for a long time. But man, Rocky 1, you just can't mess with, man. It's just so good, you know. And it goes perfectly into Rocky 2. And then, what are your thoughts on Rocky 5?
Rocky 5. You know, actually, I was definitely the one that I visit like by far and away the least. But
it's their Saint Anger, everybody. By the way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Saint Anger of Rocky.
I watched it not too long ago, and now that it's basically the middle of the franchise now, and because of that, it kind of works better. And also, like, if you, like, I watched Balboa and the Creeds a lot, and so I kind of threw it on, and I was like, wait, like, I kind of forgot, like, in a weird way that Adrian was in it. So I was like, oh, Adrian, right? I forgot she's in it.
Right.
So like,
she's still alive.
Exactly. But now you're talking about Rocky IV. I got into the Rocky series like right before Balboa came out.
Cool.
I think I saw a trailer for it and I was like, oh, that's cool. And I asked my parents and they both love Rocky and they had like all the VHSs, the DVDs or whatever it was. And they were like, yeah, let's watch them and stuff. And so we watched 1 and 2 and I was hooked. I still cry at the end of 2 every time. But I asked my mom at one point because we were going to go see Balboa in theaters and I loved Apollo. Apollo was one of my favorite characters. And we had only seen 1, 2, and 3, I think. And I asked her, I was like, hey, do you think Apollo's going to be in this one? And she was like, we should watch 4.
Yeah, you really need to catch up on the rest of the rest. That's like, you know, somebody, that's like somebody, you know, listening to the first few Metallica records and then they skip Justice and like, hey, is Cliff on the Black Album? You're like, oh, I got something to tell you. It's bad news.
Yeah.
I was just, I think it was a friend of mine in Seattle who's really close and was an old bandmate with my friend Joey who's a huge fan of the Rocky series. Like we geek out. We've gone to the theaters together to see both Creed movies and we go opening night, we wear our Rocky shirts like we're these dumb fans.
Oh, yeah.
His friend Nick had posted something about his daughter wanted to watch the Rocky movies, so they've been watching all of them. And he kind of poked fun at Rocky V a little bit, and so I just commented and said, honestly, in my humble opinion here, I think that it holds up way better than we thought it did. Now, the main
100%.
Main antagonist, Tommy Gunn, that dude, rest in peace, by the way, he was not a good actor. He was a boxer in real life. So, and then the soundtrack is pretty bad. It's like early 90s hip hop, probably made by a bunch of white dudes. So it's not great, you know. Other than that, though, like the story is really good. You know, it's like, you know, loses all his money. It's great. This is Rocky Tales from the Road.
Every time I watch, exactly. I think if it were like heavily reworked, it could have been like, I think one of the best of the series.
Yeah.
Like even the beginning, like the intro, I think it's just awesome. Where like it kind of recuts the Drago fight to like, realize like, oh, this guy's taking just a lot of damage, like, and it's always kind of like dramatic a little bit, and then like the locker room scene where he's like kind of breaking down and stuff like that.
And
yeah, it's like, oh, this is gonna be so good, and then it's just like,
yeah, totally, man. No, and you know, I remember when that came out, I guess it was 91 maybe or 90, but you know, it was 5 years after the last Rocky movie, so it's like everyone was excited about it, but you know, in comparison to the first four, it was like, oh, this is not good. But I'll rewatch all those movies about once a year, you know, and every time I get to Rocky V, I get more excited to watch it every time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then, like, it's like, too, like, it works so much better as the middle of the franchise.
Yeah.
Now that it's not, like, the last one or the second to last one.
Right, and especially now that there's, you know, they did Rocky Balboa and then the two Creed movies and stuff, which are all fantastic, by the way. Rocky Balboa, that movie is so good.
Oh, I love that movie.
I went and saw it in the theaters by myself because my wife does not care for anything Sylvester Stallone. So I went and saw it by myself. I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to see this. And I loved it, man.
Oh, yeah. And I loved it, too. I thought it was such a good end to the series to the point that, like, whenever they announced Creed and like, the plot of Creed, I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, it sounded terrible. But like, and then like we went and thought, it was me and my dad and my brother saw it in theaters. We were just like crying.
Yeah.
And like the end, too, where he like the Rocky theme finally plays as he like kind of gives him the pep talk. Like everyone in the theater goes, yeah,
there it is. Yeah, totally. No, I loved it, man. I thought Michael B. Jordan did a fantastic job. And what's her name? Tessa Thompson. She was awesome. And then what's her name in real life? She was Claire Huxtable on The Cosby Show. But
Felicia Rashad.
Yes, Felicia Rashad. That's right. She was great, you know, as the mom. And yeah, I got to rewatch those ones again soon. I obviously haven't seen them nearly as many times as all the Rocky movies, but it's still in the Rocky ethos. So, it's going to be fun. Just go along for the ride. Anyways, this concludes our Rocky talk.
Exactly.
That's a new segment we're gonna do on Only When I Talk to You. Maybe you and I can start a Rocky podcast, and we'll just get all that out there.
Let's do it.
That'd be pretty fun. But so let me pull up set list here. Let's get into Houston. June 11th, 2017, NRG Stadium. Let's pull up a couple. Oh, they don't even have facts on this show. What? I rely on this every time. There's photos, there's videos, and normally at the bottom, it always shows some facts, but it's not showing facts.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Oh well, I guess we're going to have to just have to trust Zach. but on this leg of the tour, we had Avenged Sevenfold opening and Volbeat and Mixmaster Mike. But yeah, man. So let's kind of talk about getting, you know, they announced this tour, you get tickets for the show, kind of lead us into getting to the show. Who'd you go with? What'd you do? Blah, blah, blah. Everything getting to the place.
Yeah. So, I actually, kind of like the person I go to concerts with really is my future father-in-law. Me and Sierra are getting married in September.
Congrats.
But like we've been together for like 6 years and stuff. And so like, you know, I've kind of been a part of the family for a long time and vice versa. But, we knew each other growing up but we didn't really like know each other well until college, but like basically long story short, her dad was like my little league coach and stuff. So I've known him like my whole life. And then when her and I started dating, we really hit it off. And so the year prior, like nobody would go to shows with him, but we have like the same taste in music. And he was like, "Hey, nobody wants to go see the Guns N' Roses reunion with me. Will you go?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, yep. I'll go." And so I was like, "I'm there." And so we just like kind of became like concert friends. And then when they announced the Hardwire tour, like I was still in school at university, and he sent me a screenshot, and it was like the receipt for like two tickets, like ticket confirmation. And
awesome.
He was like, "We're going," and I was like, "Oh hell yeah!"
Man, what but a like, cool father-in-law.
He's awesome. He's a huge Metallica fan. I think he's seen them in every tour since Justice.
Wow.
And like and stuff, and so but he's a great guy.
Might have to do a Metal Tales episode with him.
I asked him, "What were they like on the Justice tour?" And he was like, "They were good. They were powerful." He's like, "I remember them being kind of sloppy, but that might have been me." I was like, "That's fair."
or both, man. I mean, that's like, you know, Alcoholica era, you know.
Exactly. But no, we went and it was such a case for me too, where I mean at this point I'd been like a hardcore fan for, I don't know, 9 years. And so I think you guys have both mentioned on the show where you're like, something's gonna happen. Like, I'm not gonna see this show. Like, you know, they're gonna cancel and stuff. And so like up until the band took the stage, I was like, they're gonna cancel. Like, something's gonna happen.
Right.
I'm gonna have to watch a show where like Kid Rock comes out and sings and stuff and stuff, because James Hurt is back. No, but we came out, we went to the show. It was Volbeat and Avenged Sevenfold open. Volbeat was awesome. I actually have seen Volbeat multiple times, but it's never because like I set out to see Volbeat. They're always just kind of a support act at like a show I've gone to.
Yeah,
but they're good. So it was always like, oh cool, Volbeat. But Avenged Sevenfold's a little rough. Like, I think like whoever did their sound like was having a tough time, because like it was like you basically all you could hear was bass and drums where we were.
Wow.
And like the guitar and the vocals were real muted. We weren't on the floor. We were on we had the clubhouse seats like right down like from the club. Like it was like right on the rail. He actually had like neck surgery the month prior, and so like the whole time he had to like kind of stay like still, and it was like just kind of like slightly bobbing his head like, "I'm having a good time." But
I swear,
when we got there and stuff, I think at a certain point, like during like a bench dump bolt, we were like, "I want to go get shirts and beers," and we're like, "Yeah, that sounds good."
Yeah,
so we did that.
I remember when me and Paul and Clint went to the Detroit show. I think we missed Volbeat, or maybe we walked in as they were playing or something. But I've never really been a fan of Avenged Sevenfold. I don't think they're a bad band by any means or anything like that. But I'm there to see Metallica. Like, I was like, I don't care who's opening, unless it was another band. If like Anthrax was opening or something, it'd be a different story. But I wasn't like, "Oh, let's go watch this." You know, we were just like grabbing a couple drinks, and I think Paul grabbed an entire pizza at one point and ate it all. But yeah, it's tough with bands like Metallica that are that big. It's like they don't necessarily need an opener. Maybe on, you know, for a stadium tour, it's like you want openers because it's, you know, it's, you got to make it more of like an event, you know, rather than just a show. But you know,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, you know, they had Jim Brewer doing like comedy on that, you know, one leg of the tour and still selling out arenas. It's like, they don't need to rely on ticket sales for opening bands. So it just depends. They're just one, for me, they're one of those bands where like, if the opener is not somebody I already know, I'm probably not going to watch them, and it's nothing against them. It's just, that's just, I'm here to see Metallica. Excuse me. Sorry.
And so, let's see. And I think we'll lean up to that and think, I remember being kind of nervous too, that like, I was like, cause I don't really know a lot about like sound and acoustics. I was like, is that a problem with the venue? Like, are they going to sound like that and stuff like that? And then they came out and immediately was like, no,
it's fine.
Yeah. They came out and it was like, I think you guys like saw the same show. So it was probably like the same, but it was like just immediately like into Hardwired and like all the screens were red.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was just so loud. So many, it was like the hand of God just like crashed into a field behind us. But they came out and it was just one of the things where I think I had seen bands that I loved before, but like, it's my favorite band. And so kind of, you do have that moment where like, holy crap, it's them. You know, like that's James, that's Kirk. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. There's something about it. Like, you know, I mean, that was, you know, I'd only seen him once before. I first went to that Philadelphia show. But every time I've seen him, even the last time I saw them in Nashville, it was like, man, like they're right there, you know, especially like when I went down to Birmingham and, you know, we met up with like, you know, Sarah and Pete and we were on the rail. It was like, at one point I'm like 5 feet from James singing. And I'm like, this is so surreal. Like junior high Ethan would have peed his pants. Like it was just, and you know, I'm a grown man now. And I'm still kind of getting geeked out. Like, I can't believe like one of my musical heroes is literally right in front of me, like singing the songs I know and love.
No, what did they do to? No, after that they went straight into Atlas, and then which I didn't really like Atlas the first time I heard it. That actually, when it first came out, that's one that really grew on me. But now I really like it a lot.
Yeah.
And then like he kind of between this, like I like this tour was fit by the numbers, like it was kind of the same show, like more or less, like they kind of had certain beats they hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went into like he had like kind of an inclusive like speech that he did on that tour where it was like, we don't give a shit, like, you know, about like, you know, who you are. And like, and at first second though, when he first started, I thought he was like doing the bit from like Cunning Stunts where he's like, we don't give a shit. And I was like, are we gonna have back, really?
Yeah.
that's the bit you want to bring back
for sure.
No, and then no, the set list is kind of by the numbers. There's not like a whole lot of like songs that like, oh, they played that. But, you know, we were kind of talking about the Black album earlier, and like, you know, a lot of people, I think, you know, complained weirdly so that like, you know, the stadium tour was Black album heavy. And it was like, obviously they're playing a tour in the States. They kind of have to do that. But like never seeing them live before. And then like when they start playing those songs, like you realize that it is an album that you need to see live to totally understand.
Yeah.
Like those songs, that's by design what they are. I mean, they're stadium songs and stuff. And so when you hear them in that capacity, you're like, oh, I get it. This album makes more sense now.
Like, oh yeah, that album was and still is massive. Like
exactly.
And also too, I mean, I know Clint and I have you know, touched on this on the show, is that, you know, this point there's, it's a stadium tour, you know, and you know, not every single person that's going to fill a stadium is going to be a diehard fan like you or I or Clint or whoever, and so you've got to play it a little safer. You know, it's just, you know, as a touring musician myself that's been doing it for a long time, it's just smart. You know, like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, old school Metallica fans, you know, the Truanon members that you would love just an old school set from the first three records or something like that. But I if they did that, yeah, I would be like, wow, this is amazing. I can't believe they did that. But I guarantee people would start leaving after a while. They're like, oh, they're not going to play anything that I know. I'm out of here, you know? So I get it. It is a safer set, but they're still able to, you know, sprinkle in some cool stuff, some deep cuts and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. Like, from that we got, After Bell's Creeping Death, which like, to see that in a stadium with like, you know, 50,000 people or whatever it was screaming,
oh, I know.
Die. I mean, you can't beat that.
So good.
Lord. No, but then after that, so The Unforgiven, which, I mean, like, what can you say about The Unforgiven that had already been said? And then Now That We're Dead, they did like the drum thing, which I thought was super cool mm-hmm. for like 5 minutes. And then after that, it was kind of like, all right, this is playing.
And then 25 minutes later, you're like, okay, I think we're good.
Okay, exactly, exactly. But no, and then from there, it was Moth. And then Rome, which Rome is like another one where it's like, holy crap, these songs, like, they just work from this capacity. Like, oh my God.
Did you feel then, like a hurricane was coming when you heard Wherever My Room Live? You're like, oh.
A little bit, a little PTSD.
Yeah, totally.
Actually, funny, like, it's just kind of the part of living in Southeast Texas is, you know, hurricanes are kind of common. But whenever, a couple years later in 2008, Ike came and we didn't evacuate because my mom is a nurse and she's a first responder and stuff. And so we're like, all right, we're not going to leave her behind and stuff. And so at like 2 o'clock in the morning, like after Ike went through, I was in a car and like, we were just kind of occasionally turning on to get some AC because it's, you know, super hot. I picked up a station and it was like, yeah, this new Metallica song, The Day That Never Comes. I was like, there's a new Metallica song. And so I turned it on, listening to The Day That Never Comes at like 2 o'clock in the morning in some car. And so something about Metallica and hurricanes, I guess.
Man, it's your severe weather soundtrack for sure.
Apparently. And one did come in 2016 too when Hardwired came, so it's weird. if they have another one coming out next year, I'm gonna have to start warning people.
Yeah, that, or maybe go leave the state and buy the record somewhere else. Like drive up to Oklahoma or something, or Arkansas, and get the record there, then come back, and hopefully Texas will be spared.
Are we good?
Right.
No, they did. After that, they did Halo. Which, and then James did like kind of an extended intro, which I wasn't following the tour super closely, so I didn't know a lot about this stuff, which is great because mm-hmm. I mean, like, there is like an element of surprise. You're like, right. Oh, this is cool. And then I think Hit the Lights is whenever they did like the round, like where they like, you know, like, let's go back to like where it was like Weird Garage, and they get like super close and they bring up like Lars's backup kit to like the front.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, and they did like that was super cool. And Hit the Lights for me is like one of my favorites and stuff. So getting to see that was super cool.
Yeah, and you know, it's not every show where they play more from Kill 'Em All other than Seek and Destroy. So it's kind of a cool treat to get Hit the Lights as well.
Oh yeah, and Kill 'Em All, I think for me too, is one that like it's probably the album of the first four that like took the longest for me to get. It wasn't until like maybe in the last couple of years where I was like, oh, this album like. Has its own charm to it. It really does. Oh, yeah. It's not as like you know, technical and everything is like Lightning and Puppets, but like it's just throwing it on and stuff like that. You're like, oh, this is an album that's really special in its own right and stuff. And so it kind of took me a while for that.
And it makes sense. I mean, when you listen to that record, it makes perfect sense as to why they were the force that they were in the early 80s and why they didn't, you know, nobody sounded like them. And it makes perfect sense why they started on this upward trajectory from the get-go, you know.
Oh, it's crazy. We like even seen too, like, and just how quickly like you progress. Like I don't know if there are many artists that like have a period of time where they progress that quickly. Like mm-hmm. if you just go from like 83 to 85 and it's just like a different band.
It's insane. Yeah, absolutely insane.
But and then on out, Sad But True. And then I think he did like the Do You Want It?
Yeah.
And stuff like that, which is really cool. There's like a certain like kind of thing too where like just hearing James talk, you're like, it's just like, that's him, like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually he obviously in Houston we have the Astros and Jeff Bagwell was like, that was kind of his walk-on song with Sad But True.
Cool.
And so James kind of started talking for a second about him and he's like, yeah, we met him today, and he's like, do we have any Astros fans in here? And everyone was like cheering and stuff like that. Yeah. He's like, yeah, that's probably a stupid question and stuff. And so Sad But True is actually kind of like a, I think it's a surprisingly like a little bit of a bigger of a song, you know, even more so than it already is in Houston, just because like some people in Houston are crazy about the Astros, and that song does kind of have like a little bit of a legacy to it.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was pretty cool. Then we get into one. And like, as you, like, if you kind of know how the set list work and stuff, there's like kind of a slight bummer to it when it gets to one, just because you're like, from there on out, like, you kind of know how it's going to play out. And you're like, all right, there's really not going to be any more like surprises and stuff, but you're like, that's cool. But one, which I mean, like, as soon as like the bombs and stuff started going off, I was like, this is awesome.
Oh, and especially on the stadium, man, on the stadium run. You know, obviously, like, there's way more production in general, but for the intro to one, it was like lasers and explosions and fire, and it was just like, it was so awesome looking. And then those Megatron screens they had, man, just on one especially, where like all the soldiers are walking by, and then like by the end, it's like,
oh, yeah,
they're all like, you know, almost look like zombies. And it was, man, it was that production on that song in particular, which just blew my mind. Like, just seeing that person was like amazing.
Oh yeah, no, and you know, like talking about production too. I know we kind of skipped over it, but when obviously when they did the Ecstasy of Gold and they started playing clips from, I think it was the Good and the Bad and the Ugly that they were playing clips from. That, I mean, like, as soon as that hits and stuff like that, combined with the screens and stuff like that, you're like, oh, I think this is actually going to happen. I think they're going to play tonight.
I think they're here.
Exactly. No, then straight into Master Puppets, which it's like, I remember the first time to kind of get more into the band hearing Master of Puppets. And I remember it got to the interlude and I was like, is this a different song? And it's like, oh, it's the same song. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, this is the coolest thing ever. But no, then after that, Fade to Black, which, like, again, like, who doesn't love Fade to Black, and especially in a stadium and stuff like that.
I know, man.
And then Seek and Destroy was the end of the like the original set.
That seemed to be like pretty common on that entire album cycle, was ending the main set with Seek and Destroy.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think if there was like ever like a point in the set where it's like, all right, like, we can go to the bathroom real quick or something, it probably would be Seek and Destroy. Just right. It's like, it's like, especially if they extended a little bit and stuff like that. So you're like, I don't really need to hear Seek and Destroy.
Everyone has, or most people have, a bathroom break song, even with Metallica.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know what mine would have been. Maybe I didn't take a bathroom break. Maybe I just made sure to take care of that before the show started.
I actually was such a rookie about it, because we went and stuff, and we actually got a hotel room like that was just a block away, so we didn't have to drive that night, and we had taken a lot of like tequila shots and were drinking beers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point though, like, I have such a bad bladder. So I was like, I can't go to the bathroom like while Metallica's playing. So I just have to cut off the fluids and stuff. And so they hit the stage at like 9 PM. And then so from like 3 PM on, the only thing I had to drink was like tequila and beer. So at like a certain point I was like dry heaving a little bit, but I was like, it's okay.
I'm gonna make it to Enter Sandman.
Exactly. Then next, it was it either Fixer or Battery? It was Battery. Okay, it was Battery. Just kidding. But no, they had some surprise.
You really had me thinking for a second. I was like, wait a second, did they do that?
No, they had it was a thrash spot. They had Battery, which I think that would probably, if I could choose, I would have chosen Battery.
Yeah.
And stuff. So I was super pumped about that. And then Nothing Else Matters, which, I guess if there was a universal bathroom break song for like bigger fans, it probably would be Nothing Else Matters.
Right. Yeah.
But then last but not least, they had, we did Sandman, and they, you know, they did that thing where like, where James is like on his knees and he has like the pick and it shows like the city, and then he turns it around and it's like the Metallica look, like, and then he starts strumming the intro.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, that was such a cool thing to do. Like, as soon as that starts, it's like, and talk about like, you know, songs that just work, and like, you realize that like, oh, it's like, this song is popular for a reason. Like, this is Metallica's biggest song for a reason.
Yeah, totally.
As soon as you start hearing that song like play throughout a stadium, it's just like, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've never, you know, stepped away from the Black Album for that long. There was, you know, obviously definitely periods in my past where like, maybe a few months it would go by, I wouldn't listen to it or something, but going to that first show in Philadelphia and watching the entire show, not leaving early or anything like that, and seeing Enter Sandman live, I was just like, man, this song is so powerful, has reached so many people around the globe, and it made me like fall in love with that song all over again. I remember like the next day I was on tour when I got to go to that show, so the next day was like a work day for me. And I remember I have like a little, you know, on my work box when I was working for Kings, I had like a little Bluetooth speaker and I just listened to music while I was, you know, changing guitar strings and stuff like that. And I was like, I'm fucking listening to the Black Album today, you know? It's just such a great record. I mean, shoot, I bought a second copy on vinyl recently because I randomly found the Walmart exclusive one.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that record is just, and it's, you know, amazing, obviously, and it's such an exciting year with the whole anniversary box set and, you know, the blacklisted covers, all that stuff, man. It's the year of the Black Album, man. It's super cool.
Oh yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get the box set, but I'm looking forward to seeing some of, like, the bonus stuff. Like, I think it's gonna be awesome.
Mm-hmm. The few covers that they've released so far have been really cool. My favorite so far is the Jason Isbell one, because it's like, I don't know if you heard it yet, but it's very like old school kind of country, like train beat, they call it, you know, like a tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick kind of thing. And what's cool about it in a way is that Jason Isbell is an amazing guitar player, like really, really good. And as is his other guitar player, Sadler, and their cover doesn't have like any kind of solo section. It was kind of weird at first, but it makes sense when you listen to the song, but he, you know, it's totally like written differently, but Jason sings like the melody and all the phrasing just like James. And so it's a really cool cover, a really cool take on it for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that's just obviously when covers are the best too, is when it's just kind of, they just kind of take it apart and rebuild it their own way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like I feel like once I hear all 53 of these covers or whatever, I think my least favorite will probably be anyone that does it verbatim, you know, which is cool. You know, I mean,
exactly.
that definitely, I think, has like a place, but you got to do it really freaking well. You know, like, you know, Hailstorm has like a series of cover EPs and they did the song Ride the Lightning. And of course it already sounds different because it's Hailstorm and they have a female singer with Lizzie, but they did it verbatim, but something about that one really worked well, I thought. You know, but
yeah.
Do I want to hear 20 verbatim versions of Nothing Else Matters? Probably not.
Exactly.
But I'm anxious to hear the rest of these covers, man. I think it'll be really cool.
Yeah, me too. I've liked them all so far. What did you think of the Miley Cyrus one?
I mean, I think she's a hell of a singer, and I've got no objections to her. And she's like a hard rock and metal fan. I mean, she's covered a ton of cool songs in her own live shows, and she did a great cover of Zombie by the Cranberries a couple years ago that was awesome. But no, I think she's great, man. I think she's got an amazing voice, and her being a fan, you know, you can hear that when she sings other people's songs, you know, like when she did Say Hello to Heaven at the Chris Cornell tribute show. I mean, she crushed that. Every once in a while, like I get tempted, and like on Facebook or whatever, when Metallica will post, you know, about that cover or whatever, I'm like, okay, I'll read a couple comments, and it's always just a bunch of like truing on, you know, they're like, oh, this is bullshit, oh, this is stupid, why are they doing this? And it's like, just sit back and enjoy the ride, and they're giving you all this amazing content. Just, you don't have to take it, but if you're not going to take it, just shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't sound like Kill 'Em All.
That's what I was going to bring up too, is her cover of Say Hello to Heaven is like so great. When I heard that, I mean, I never didn't like Miley, but like hearing that, I was like, oh man, like she is the real deal. Like, for sure.
I mean, shoot, I'm not like a huge, you know, modern pop music fan, but a good song's a good song, and her song Wrecking Ball is fucking good.
Oh yeah.
That's
a
great chorus, man. It's so catchy, and you know, yeah, I know that a lot of old school Metallica fans aren't going to love Miley Cyrus talk, but I don't care. I really don't.
Whatever. Yeah.
Who cares? We talked about Rocky, we talked about Miley Cyrus and Metallica a little bit.
Exactly.
Well, dude, before we wrap it up here, man, I know this is not going to be out for a couple weeks, but as I said earlier, this is the 4th of July today. Do you have any plans today?
I really don't. No, we have a kind of a lot going on. We actually are, God willing, and everything, you know, goes through. We're closing on the house on Friday.
Oh, nice.
And then Sierra had to go. Thank you. And then Sierra had to go get wedding dress alterations this weekend in Houston. And I'm also here with my dog, who's like cowering down, but she's a shelter dog, and
nice.
Just fireworks and her just don't get along and stuff. So I think it's mostly going to be me just kind of like basically holding her the rest of the day. Just like keep her on my lap. Like, you're good.
Yeah. That's definitely something that a lot of people don't consider, is that, you know, not only dogs that are inside homes, but you know, the dumb people that leave their dog chained up outside 24/7. you know, most dogs do not like loud explodey things. So,
exactly.
Like we're going to a friend's house that's having a little hang this evening, and I'm gonna go buy some fireworks, but I always have a rule. I don't buy the loud ones.
Mm.
You know, just for that very reason. You know, we've got dogs. They don't really care anymore. Like, they used to kind of get weirded out about it, and now, like last year, there was dudes on my street like having like a firework battle, and just lighting off like mortars, and so loud and stuff. And my dogs were just sound asleep. They didn't even care.
No, and I mean, it's to be expected. I think as long as you don't get crazy with it, don't go past like a certain point. I'm pretty noise sensitive and stuff, and I just kind of like tend to assume everyone's the same way. So I'm just like, I'll just keep it down.
Yeah, totally. Maybe you can throw some noise canceling headphones on your dog.
Exactly. I thought of it. I really did. Last night, there was only like five or six that went off, but she was struggling.
Yeah.
She just like basically stood next to me, just trembling. We got her last year from the show. She's older and stuff, and I don't think she like ever really had a home or anything like that. So
right.
She's still kind of adapting.
Yeah. Well, that's really good of you to adopt a dog. I think everybody should if you want a dog. There's plenty of them out in this world, millions of them that need homes, and that's a good thing to do. And, yeah, good on you for doing that.
Oh, thanks.
Well, Zach, thanks so much for doing this, man. I hope everyone enjoyed Zach's story, our Rocky talk, our Miley talk, our Metallica talk, fireworks and dogs talk. Thanks again, man. And we really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Hey everyone, this is Ethan and Clint. We're here to tell you about supporting the show via Patreon.
That's right. Every week, Ethan and I work hard to bring you the best Metallica content possible. If you think the show has value, consider supporting us on a financial level at Patreon.
For $5 a month, or the price of 2 cups of coffee, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. But that's not all.
In addition to being able to help sleep at night for supporting your favorite podcast, we've also come up with incentives to say thank you that are exclusively available to patrons. For example, for a pledge of $5 or more, you immediately get free downloads of every Cover Our World Blackened EP.
Ticket giveaways for shows like SNM2 and Slane Castle.
Box sets, rare vinyl, Metallica memorabilia like SNM2 guitar picks.
Email priority, meaning we'll read your email first on the show, with a chance to ask guests like Hailstorm, Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, and Metallica Road Crew your very own questions.
And the opportunity to come on the show as a guest for our Metal Tales bonus episodes, in which you can tell us all about any Metallica show you've been to in the past.
All this and more for becoming a patron and supporting Metal Up Your Podcast.
We couldn't do this show without you, and to everyone on the ride with us, we sincerely thank you. Peace.
Adios.
Thank you.